here tonight with Corey Cottrell from Bad Wires, who are a fantastic band for based out of Louisville, Kentucky currently, and honestly, like, just a fucking killer live show. So Corey, thank you. I greatly appreciate you taking time out of your evening to hang out and chat.
Thanks for having me on. I love being able to talk about myself and my band. So
yeah, it's so I do it just real conversational, right? Like how we talk when we're out at a show. Like, I might ask you a couple of questions and we'll just kind of see where it goes. So my first question is, where did Bad Wires come from?
I moved to Louisville, Kentucky in 2016. My wife and I moved from Austin, Texas, and I had been living there since 2007. She got a job up here as an art curator. So this is my colored memory of it. We had finally saved up enough money to remodel our house in Austin. We bought a house kind of in people told us it was a scary neighborhood at the time. It wasn't, but we bought a house there in 2013, finally saved up enough money that we could work on it. And I like have everything laid out in the garage and like looking at my plans, like, okay, I'm gonna do this. And she walks into the garage. She's like, hey, what do you think about Kentucky? I was like, I don't, why? She's like, I just got this badass job. I'm like, all right, well, fuck, let's check it out, man. And all the bands I'd been playing in Austin at that point had either broken up or gone on hiatus or something. So, and I grew up in Missouri. So I grew up listening to a shit ton of Louisville bands. I had a radio show when I was 16. I went from midnight to 6 a.m. every Saturday when I was 16 years old. My parents were, either they knew what they were doing by keeping me off of the fucking streets, or they had no idea what the fuck we were getting up to, because the radio show got wild. But it seemed like, you know, at one point in time, like half the bands we were listening to came from Louisville. So I'd never been to Louisville, but it always had this nice musical mystique in the same way that Austin did before I moved there. So I moved up here in 2016, met a drummer not long after I moved here. And he and I started working on some songs that I'd been sitting on in Austin and hadn't really done anything with. And then spent like, I don't know, another year and a half trying to find a guitar player. I wanted a guitar player who could play solos and just fucking kill it on solos, but wouldn't play solos. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wanted someone that could just fucking kill it, but didn't do that. And also wasn't afraid to just make fucked up weird noises all the time. And we just couldn't really find anybody to fit the bill. So it was like, fuck it, we'll just be a bass and drum band. And then someone finally introduced me to Connor, and we played our first show as a band in 2018.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then it's just been like nothing but bad timing and starts and stops since then. So it seems like anytime we start to do something, like the universe or something makes us go, no, you need to sit down for another year. Chill out for a minute, you know? So
no.
Yeah, exactly. It's been maddening, man. Like, we played our first show like late 2018. Shows 5, 6, and 7 were in Austin for South by Southwest in 2019. And we spent the rest of that year recording and mixing our debut album. Had to let the first drummer go like towards the end of 2019 because he had some personal stuff going on and he just needed to go deal with that. Still good friends. We still catch up via Instagram and shit like that. But so then we, you know, went on our first new drummer hunt late 2019. Finally found a new drummer, and the debut record came out in March of 2020. We did no promotion for it or anything. We're just going to get in the band and, you know, hock it on the road and do old school stuff. But like, I'm old enough that I kind of hate what social media has done to music, and it just kills me every time I have to get online and do something for the band. You know what I mean? So we're like, fuck it, man. We're just going to old school. We're just going to fucking travel as much as we can, sell the record or not sell the record, but just get the fuck out there as much as we can. So that was the entire game plan with the first record. And it came out March 2020. Nope. And everything just got put on hold. Yeah, exactly. So we had like one solid tour set up that was taking us back to South by, and like 3 or 4 other tours in the works. And it's just like, boom, boom, boom. All right, well, cool. Let's just sit down for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And it feels like it's just been like that off and on. So, you know, we start really playing again in like tail of end of 2021. beginning of 2022, we're finally getting out, starting to do stuff again. We did two tours, hit South by again. And then the second drummer told us that he was going to leave because he wanted to pursue his dream of aviation. He wanted to become a pilot, you know?
Okay.
Well, fucking A, like anybody can pursue all of their dreams, you know, but at the same time, we're like, fuck, okay. Yeah. So like went into another drummer hunt, and I'm sure you already know this, but like all the drummers in Louisville that are good are already in like 10 bands. It's insane. And all the drummers, we also need a drummer who's like wild but also got their shit together, you know what I mean? And like the joke about drummers is like they're borderline non-functional humans most of the time if they're really good drummer, you know. So it took a long time to find the right match, and we did South by in 2023, but we had a fill-in drummer for all those shows, and I think it took like almost a full fucking year before we found a couple of people we were going to try out. And the week we were going to try out two drummers, I got dropped off a ladder and I shattered my left wrist. And so then it's like another almost year of rehab and physical therapy and surgery and then trying to play my bass again. And yeah, that's Bad Wires in a nutshell. It's like do something for a short period of time and then sit the fuck down, man.
Yeah. It's like you got to jam all of it into this week because it's going to be another year of nothing.
Exactly. You never know what's about to happen, so do it all right fucking now.
Yeah. Well, you know, that first show, you coming back from that shattered wrist was fucking great, dude. You guys looked and sounded fantastic. And is it Andy Cook on drums?
Yeah. Yeah. He's he's someone that people have been recommending we reach out to for like probably 6 or 7 months before we finally started talking to him. And I'm always real reluctant when someone's like, hey, you got to meet my buddy. He plays drums, you know, because I'm like, okay, cool. You know, like, yeah, I'll keep that in mind. But that's how I met both Connor and Andy. And much to my surprise, they're both fucking incredible musicians. Andy's one of the easiest people I've ever worked with. He's just a really easygoing, very calm, very mellow dude who's super into prog rock, but will also get fucking weird with us. So it's just like a wonderful combination. And that first show back was definitely earlier than we thought we were going to do. Cause I still thought I needed like another 2 or 3 months before I felt comfortable enough to play bass again. Cause my wrist is still real tight and yeah. And I was just fucking nervous to get up and do it again, you know? But when we found out Childlight was coming through and we got asked to open, we're like, fuck, it's Childlight, man. You have to do that. So, we did 3 practices a week for like a month and a half. And that was my physical therapy at that point. And, yeah, it felt really good.
Hell yeah. And, you know, those dudes, you know, Sean and Sean are always great. You know, every time see them live, it's the same thing. They are so nuts. You like, you don't know what you're going to get. You know, you're going to get a great show, but.
Exactly. You know? And exactly the kind of musical world that I like to be a part of. You know, it's like just a little bit metal. It's just a little bit punk, but it's really fucking weird and noisy and loud and kind of angry, but also really happy and just sort of. You know, and that's really the kind of shit I get down on. So to have our first show back and really our first local show in a year and a half, for that to be, it was pretty fucking awesome.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, yeah. It was. Well, so I'm going to tell you this. I went to the same high school as Sean Knight.
Okay. No shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. All right.
So obviously many, many years ago, you know, cause we're old and shit. and I think we had maybe 1 year where like he was coming in and I was leaving.
Oh, interesting. Small world, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I see him. I've seen him at, I don't know. I don't even know how many times I've seen Childbite. I would say probably 10 or 12 times at this point.
Nice.
Cause they're always playing with like Super Joint or Battle Cross or you know, all these other bands that I go see, and it's like, god, they played Battle Cross's like indefinite hiatus show in 22.
Nice.
That was
those bands are just fucking everywhere. I mean, and their style, it just blends in so well with so many different types of heavy bands. So
yeah,
perfect. We were supposed to play with them in 2021 at Headliners. We were supposed to play with them in Human Impact. But they got COVID and had to cancel. We were super bummed out about that. I still have the poster up here on the wall where we crossed out the child bite name because they couldn't play, but it's still a very nice poster.
That is a sweet poster.
Yeah. Angry Blue made that. It's a guy named Justin here in town. And actually, I've been off and on collecting silkscreen posters for a while, and I have like 10 of his posters that I bought like 20 plus years ago. So I kind of tripped out when he realized he lived here in Louisville and got to meet him and see some of his artwork. And yeah, he's a super cool guy that does super cool shit.
Hell yeah.
Those people here in Louisville, there's a lot of super cool people that do super cool shit, you know?
So, well, that's the good thing about Louisville is it's like, it's this mecca of weird,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's so many artists and independents. Some of the music we have, you know, in my opinion, at least, you know, as I say, the last 10 years has just been fucking phenomenal, right? We've got some tremendous bands.
100%. Louisville has a wealth of talent, and it's not even just the bands, like, you know, the jazz nights that happen all over town. Like, I haven't been able to get to them for a while, but Knock Bar had, what was his name? I want to say Dylan, but that's not right. But like every Tuesday night, there was a dude that played at Knock Bar with his jazz band, and it was a rotating cast of people. It's some of the best jazz I've ever fucking heard.
Right.
Decca, you know, Mike Hyman on drums and a couple other local cats, and fucking incredible jazz scene in this town. And my wife and I, we got a house in the Shelby Park neighborhood, and we ended up having a couple of housemates from Guyana, Brazil, who were here to study jazz. And it turns out there's a jazz exchange program between Guyana, Brazil and Louisville, Kentucky. So there's a shit ton of jazz, Brazilian jazz musicians here. And there's just a wealth of talent in this county. It constantly surprises me. But I one of the things that I love about Louisville originally and still do is, especially comparing it to Austin, it's still a very easygoing, very affordable town, you know? So if you're like a weirdo creative, it's pretty easy to do your thing and also figure out how to make enough money to do your thing. You know, whether you're making your money off your art or you're doing some sort of side hustle, you know, coming from Austin, it's not quite like that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I moved there in 2007 and I got to know a lot of like the older weirdo punk musicians, and they're all still there and they're all still doing their thing, but everybody's kind of moving out because it's just so fucking expensive. It's really hard to be like just a creative weirdo, you know, but you can do that in a place like Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, you know, the downside with Austin is like, I feel like everyone moved there, right? They like Tesla came in and all these other corporations would just drive all those prices up, you know?
And Tesla, like they bought our practice spaces and bulldozed them, you know, that's like where one of the plants is now. I don't know if you ever saw the old movie Slackers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's old Austin and it is not at all like that anymore. No. You know, we still go back pretty regularly, and there's neighborhoods that I literally lived in for years. And if you put a blindfold on me and put me on a corner, like in a neighborhood I used to live in and took the blindfold off, I'd have no fucking idea where I was. Like, whole neighborhoods were bulldozed and, you know, big buildings with shopping centers on the bottom. And it's a fucking trip. I mean, it's still a wonderful town, still amazing fucking bands there, but, you know, it's harder to just be a creative weirdo there, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot more expensive to make it happen.
Yeah, man. And then you come to a place like Louisville and it has all of the amenities of a big city, but you can unplug and feel like you're still in the movie Slacker, you know, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
Also, we're like within a 6-hour drive of like 30 cities. Yeah. You know, if you're coming from Austin, that's like leaving a fucking desert island, you know, like I can go in any direction and go to a city. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I was in Indianapolis last night, which is about a 2-hour drive. I went to this festival called Death in the Midwest.
Uh-huh. How was that?
It was great. Like the bands were absolutely crushing it. And one band took the stage. They're probably halfway through their set and all of a sudden the power went out and everyone's like, oh, like, all right, let's get that fixed. Right. Took them 5 or 6 minutes and then the power came back on and they finished their set.
Wow.
The next band finished their set. And then the band after was probably 2 songs in and power went out again. Like what the hell happened? Apparently a car hit a telephone pole across the street.
They got magbarred.
Yes, they definitely got magbarred.
Fuck, man.
It's crazy. So through your, you know, through your rehab with your wrists, you know, obviously you do construction.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It was a interesting couple of months for me. Thankfully I married someone who's much smarter than me, and she's been saving up for an emergency. You know what I mean? So the head of my radius bone shattered into like 10 pieces, and I had to get a plate and 10 screws put in to rebuild it. And the surgeon, basically, if he could have, he would have put me in a bubble and chained it to a wall for about 4 months. Cause he's like, your bones are, they're like balsa wood. So if you just trip wrong, if you hit it on something, anything, you could just pull those screws right out of the bones and you completely undo the surgery, you know? So there's a couple of months of just this. Like, I was like, can I, you know, go for a walk in the park? And they're like, you could. I was like, well, fuck, man. Like, do I need to treat myself like I'm made out of glass now? I'm like, kind of. Like, okay. So I got my wife to start taking me to Planet Fitness so I can like sit on her combat bike and watch soap operas pedal for like an hour or so, you know. It took a few months to recover from all of that. And when I was finally able to start doing stuff with my hand, I had lost all my strength. And even by the time the bones had all healed around the screws and I didn't have to worry about fucking myself up anymore, everything still hurt. And I just, you know, going onto a job site, I felt like a 12-year-old kid going to work with his dad. You know, I couldn't do anything anymore. And I'd go to pick up stuff I never thought anything about and be like, oh shit. I'd look at my work partner and be like, dude, he's like, I got you. Stop trying to do shit, you know. So at a certain point, I felt like I was on the job site for jokes and moral support, which is how I felt when I first started doing construction. You know, like I'm being paid to stand around and make people laugh. But I'm mostly back to normal now. I've been able to do a couple jobs on my own. We're building a recording studio pretty soon. We got a couple of the bigger jobs coming up. So we're starting to do shit again. I still try to balance like work and my personal life pretty well. So I'm spending enough time doing art and music and then still leave enough time and gas in the tank to do construction, but it's not wearing me out the way it had been. And I feel like a functional human again. So
that's good.
It's still like the surgeon told me that it would keep improving for 2 months. Cause like that's as far in as I can bend it right now, which is, you know, obviously not nearly as far as it should be. And I can't bend it out all the way. Well, it's a lot better than it was. You know, some mornings it's really tight and I can't quite make a fist. If I go like 3 days without playing my bass, it all gets so much tighter. So playing bass is still physical therapy for me. So I try to play every day, even if it's just like 3 to 5 minutes because I'm running out of time. But if I can spend like a half hour on it every day, it just feels so much better. So, you know, music is healing in so many ways. Now it's physically healing.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think, you know, music has gotten all of us through tough times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, the people that are really serious about music, they get it. It carries you through all the bad shit and helps you see that there's light at the end of the tunnel if you're in the middle of the bad shit, you know. Yeah. Or if you listen to super angry music, it like helps you work out all the bad shit you have inside. Like that originally music was like fucking therapy for me, you know. Like I was a really shy, really quiet kid, and I did not know how to express myself at all, but I was also a really fucking angry kid, you know. So music saved me in that it gave me that outlet, and it allowed me to just you know, get all the bad shit out of my head, all the fucking shit I wanted to say off my chest, and be able to walk away and, you know, be a functional human afterwards, you know.
Yeah. So what, you know, when I guess in your younger years, what artist or musician or whatever made you go, okay, I really want to, I think that's my avenue.
Yeah. So my brother and I grew up in a very musical family. Our parents are both bluegrass and country musicians. So I've always been in music, listened to it my whole life, you know? And when I was really young, I was super into like, you know, all the hair metal shit, like Poison and Nose. Bon Jovi was the first concert I ever went to, but Poison was the first record I ever got on vinyl. You know,
okay.
And then I started getting to more like heavier stuff, but it was Nirvana that really kind of made me go, whoa, what the fuck? And then from Nirvana, I started getting introduced to like Fugazi and Jesus Lizard and Scratch Acid. And, you know, probably Jesus Lizard almost more than anybody else at that time. Like when I listened to it, I was like, the fuck is that? That's for me. What is that? You know, it just blew me away. But No Means No, when I heard them, I was sending you messages about them. Yeah. No Means No was hands down the one that was like, you can fucking do that on a bass? Like, I don't have to be that guy in the background just like this. Like, I can fucking do that? Fuck. You know, that changed everything for me. And they keep changing everything for me. Like, you talking about a multi-layered band. Fuck. Like, the album Wrong is probably changed my life and sent it in different directions like three different times, you know, when I was 16, when I was like late 20s, and then again when I was 30 and going through a divorce. Like it's this well that just is completely, it will never run dry, you know what I mean? They're probably the one. But everything that was coming out on Touch and Go, they were like our Bible when I had my radio show. And like the more obscure and the more loud and the more weird, we're just super into it. But yeah, those Jesus Lizard, Fugazi, Scratch Acid, and No Means No were probably the ones that just like really catapulted me in a different direction.
That's awesome. So like you mentioned Nirvana, and I think you and I aren't too far off in age, right? We're probably within a few years of each other.
I'll be 48 this year.
Oh, I'll be 48 this year also.
There you go.
So there was a guy, my dad was worked at GM, but also did leather work when I was real young. Well, there was a dude named Dean Battles that he did leather work for, and Dean was a real big metalhead.
Okay.
So he turned me on to like Iron Maiden and Slayer and, you know, all these things back in, God, 84, 83, you know? So I don't know. We see each other, pass each other, say, hey, whatever. Bleach came out and I see him. I can tell you, it was springtime. I'm walking through town with my friends. He goes, hey, I think I got something you'll like. And I'm like, okay, weirdo, what do you got? He goes, well, it's this band, album just came out. I don't really like them. You know, he said, but I think you'll dig them. And I'm like, okay. So he gives me Bleach, you know, like that was the days when it was still unmastered. Like you know, you heard all of the flaws, you heard everything in it. And it was, to me, it was like, oh, you know, like the world totally opened up.
Yeah. I didn't hear Nirvana until I heard Smells Like Teen Spirit for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it was like that lightning bolt moment where you just like remember exactly where you were, exactly what was happening, everything. It was just like you could feel reality sort of shifting under you, you know. It's like, what the fuck is going on, man? And it was just, yeah, it was kind of all over from there. But and fucking, I think with some people I know, right, thinking about people I grew up with, there were people that were definitely like gatekeepers and tried to be more indie than anybody else or more punk rock than anybody else. And the ones that loved Nirvana suddenly became against Nirvana down the road because they became mainstream, you know, like that classic bullshit. But I think, you know, you're gonna fucking give it to Nirvana because A, they were fucking incredible, but Kurt Cobain, anytime he was being interviewed or anything, he always talked about smaller bands. Always. Like, I remember an interview where he was like, we're not that great. People should be checking out the Meat Puppets. They should be checking out the Melvins. They should be, and he's just like listing all these people. Like, he was a fucking good dude that really believed in independent music, you know? And I don't think they get enough credit for that.
No, I absolutely agree. And it's tough, right? It, like, looking at the people who are like, you're a sellout and what have you, like, as a fan, you know, as a fan of music, fuck, every band I like, I want them to have all the success, you know, sell out the stadium.
Totally. And it's like, it was also very sincere. It wasn't like, what am I trying to think of? It wasn't like a boy band or something like that, where it feels like this manufactured product, right?
Right.
Like they were doing their own thing and it felt so sincere and so heartfelt, and everybody was still along for that ride and they became superstars. So it's like, you can't really accuse somebody of being a sellout in that situation. It's just that everybody legitimately fucking loved them. I mean, if anything, that like kind of killed them that they got so big and famous, you know, like they didn't, when Nevermind really took off, they stopped touring for a while because it was just too much and too overwhelming. Yeah. And then once you have that level of fame, like, it can fucking kill you. Obviously it did, you know?
Yeah.
So I was never on their sellout trains, but I definitely, you know, I was one of those people that fucking hated major record labels also. But yeah. I still never always gave them the credit for what they did and never shit on them because, you know, their follow-up to Nevermind was to take all their money and all their resources and go to Steve Albini's place in Chicago, you know? Fucking badass, man. And it pissed off all the fucking music industry, all of them, you know, like, never fucking sellouts at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, they had three albums. I mean, not, let me say, three majors, uh-huh. right? Not including Bleach. And then you look at In Utero, and In Utero is so different from anything else they did.
Totally.
It's like, hell yeah, that's, you know, that's what you want to do. You get out there, you get the recognition, you're like, okay, let's really get fucking weird with it.
Exactly. Let's really express ourselves the way we want to with all of these resources now, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking awesome. And yeah. I wish they'd been able to keep it going, but yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Absolutely. And you know, it's that obviously Kurt's and the anniversary of his death is coming up.
Oh, okay.
April.
I don't know what his death date is, but I remember exactly where I was standing when someone told me.
April 5th, 1994.
Okay.
And then
totally adds up.
Yep. A few years later, you had Layne Staley, who they didn't find until April 8th, but they said he died on April 5th.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yep. And it's tough for me because my little brother passed away on April 5th of 2019.
Fuck, man.
Also a suicide. So it's like,
That's a heavy fucking day then.
Yeah.
Shit.
For sure. I was just thinking about that today. Like, ah, damn. So I find myself, I still love Nirvana and I will forever, but there are times where I'm like, okay, I can't listen to it because.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Too heavy.
Yeah. There's certain things that you'll always honor them, but that doesn't mean you always need to be putting it into your psyche.
Correct. Yep. So you do art outside of playing music also?
Yeah, and it's something that I'm getting into more and more. It's been like a lifelong dream and ambition to be able to draw and paint well. But this kind of explains my music also. Growing up, I was one of those people that was convinced you either knew how to do something or you didn't. You didn't learn something, you know what I mean? And if you got good at something, like, that wasn't something you did through hard work. You were either good at something or you weren't, you know? And now that I'm older and have a much wiser perspective, and I've been doing construction for a long time and realizing I can do fucking anything. It's just a matter of like sitting down and taking the time to learn how to do it. And, you know, I have squirrel brain, so I'm easily distracted. But once I was laid up and couldn't do a fucking thing, I was like, I'm never going to get another opportunity to focus on drawing and painting. So I've been doing a shit ton of drawing and painting. My wife worked, she's an art curator, which is what moved us up here. And she's not a crazy music person. Like, she's got her bands that she's gotten into recently, but, you know, in her words, she loves me despite the fact that I'm a musician. It's never been like a draw at all. But since she's been getting into music, like, Viagra Boys is one of her favorite things in the fucking world. I don't know if you saw the headlines, but that was easily one of the best shows I've seen in a long fucking time.
Right on.
She likes smart, weird shit like that. But she's a visual arts person. And so I'm getting the time in my life to be able to explore that more. So I'm doing a lot of drawing. I'm doing a little bit of painting. Mainly right now I'm just drawing every day. And just really trying to hone that. We'll see where it all goes, but I'm trying to make that a much bigger part of my life moving forward. Cause, you know, there's something about those brushes with your mortality, right? Like, I've always wanted to learn how to draw, but I've never taken the time to do it. I drop 8 feet off a ladder. I shatter my wrist. I'm standing there like this. We're out in the middle of nowhere. It was a 45-minute drive to the nearest ER.
Oof.
Yeah, in a truck that had no AC on top of it. But I'm with my best friends, who were making each other laugh the entire time. But there was like 5 minutes where I'm standing there with my wrist while he's running around getting everything together. And I'm just like, fuck, fuck, fuck. Everything's fucking ruined. Right, it's time for me to focus on drawing. You know, like, you have those brushes with your mentality where you're like, this could all be over just like that.
Yeah.
I want to do those things that I never did, that I always wanted to fucking do. I'm never going to have this opportunity again where I can't work. I can't do the band. I've also got to figure out how to keep myself fucking sane for 4 months and not drive my wife fucking nuts. So yeah, really, really started shifting and getting into art a lot more than I had in the past. So.
Hell yeah. That, you know, that's how you do it, dude. You take a shit situation. You're like, ah, you know what? This is an opportunity to do whatever, you know?
Totally. I had a discussion not that long ago with a buddy of mine about nihilism, and I'm not a nihilist by any means, but I think that ultimately life probably is meaningless. Like, you know, like you look at the universe, I was like, none of this really has meaning except for the meaning that we can ascribe to it and that we can bring to it. And I think that same kind of attitude and mentality applies to situations. Obviously you can't do this in every situation, but hopefully in a bad and negative situation, you're able to find a way forward or turn it into an opportunity of some sort. And I think that does take like a cultivated mindset in some ways, which for me came with age and wisdom. You know, as a young person, like I didn't think that way at all. I was not like overly negative, but like a roadblock would very easily just destroy everything for me, you know?
Yeah.
When I was in my early 20s, I got really into kickboxing, and it saved my life, like literally saved my life, but it also gave me a different headspace and a different perspective. And as I've continued to grow and turn into a, hopefully a better human, I've learned how to more or less stay positive in shitty situations and turn it into an opportunity if you can. And that doesn't mean like not recognizing shitty situations or shitty experiences. Like when I shattered my wrist, I got home and I'm like, okay, I'm basically going to be like this for 4 months. And everybody I knew, not everybody knew, a lot of people I knew were like, you're going to go fucking crazy. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try and steer towards being positive. If I'm having a shitty fucking day, I'm going to recognize it. And if I'm feeling depressed, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to think about it, I'll write about it or something. Like, I'm just going to honor it and hopefully it moves through me. But in general, I'm just going to try and steer towards being positive. And it worked. I only had like probably two or three bouts of like real depression with this experience. And that seems pretty fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so, right? You go from being a, you know, a musician and this, I'm going to call it a laborer, right? For lack of a better term, but this 100%. Person, you know, works with your fucking hands.
There's a lot of honor for me in being a blue collar laborer. You know, I'm a farm boy from Missouri and I take a lot of pride in being a blue collar laborer.
Right on. So I'm going to ask you this, what part of Missouri are you from?
Both sides of my family have farms near Hannibal, Missouri. It's a small town called Center. The population is continuing to go down. So I think right now it's at like 550. And both sides of my family actually are still there. My dad's family still has the farm that's been in the family for like three or four generations. My mom's side of the family sold theirs, but my parents split up when we were young and my brother and I grew up in Columbia, Missouri, which is right between Kansas City and St. Louis, small college town. So I lived there the vast majority of my life, but we went back to the farm very regularly.
Gotcha. I do. I'm familiar with Missouri. My mom's side of the family is from Missouri, just south of St. Louis.
Okay.
DeSoto.
Oh yeah, I know the name. I knew two different people from there in Columbia. I can't say I've been there, but I do know of it.
Yeah. Well, so I was there for probably about 2 years in my late teens. And I just found this out, right? So my family had been in that area for like 200 plus years.
Oh, wow.
So I'm in this small town and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go talk to her. My mom's like, oh yeah, that's your cousin, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ah, oh, damn. Like, really? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't grow up in my hometown of 500 people, because it would have been a lot of that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh, damn. But that's, yeah. You know, I've got a lot of really good memories of there. Like for me, right, you're like, where you said, you know, kickboxing was that for you. DeSoto was that for me.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Right. Because it was, I was the outcast. I grew up in Detroit and now I'm in this little small town in Missouri. And the people that I lived close to directly were super cool. I'm still friends with today, you know, which is real nice. But everyone else was like, he's the outsider. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm the outsider, but I'm cool, you know, I'm not, whatever. I'm fucking weird. So that it taught me, I had a lot of, isolated time while I was there because there wasn't any getting out and going places a lot of times. I just talked to a guy from St. Louis. Where did I meet him? I met him at, maybe it was either the Yob show in June or Paul Bearer. And we were talking about venues in St. Louis. And I remember Mississippi Nights.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was not there anymore. Jeez.
Yeah, a lot of that shit's gone. Growing up in Columbia, I was never a fan of St. Louis growing up in Columbia. Like, it felt like, if you weren't into Budweiser Sports or Sammy Hagar, there's nothing in the town for you. That's how it felt growing up, you know, which isn't true, obviously. There were so many good bands that came out of St. Louis, and it was just harder to go to that town and find stuff. It was like you had to do some excavation, and you had to know the right people to go to the right places, you know.
Yeah.
And there's some wonderful stuff there, and I know some amazing musicians and people there. And, I've grown to really appreciate St. Louis.
Yeah, my favorite record store of all time was Vintage Vinyl.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was a great place.
Spent so much time in that place, just like, you know, nerding out.
Yeah, it was one of those national landmarks for the right people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure.
Creepy Crawl, did you ever go to that place?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Creepy Crawl was, the name kind of says it all. It was like a fucking divey dive bar. But I saw some fantastic bands there. It was a really cool place. And afterwards, there was a diner not far from there that was like, a lot of St. Louis is a rough neighborhood. But this diner was in an area where you had to be buzzed in, and you just kind of prayed that there was room to be buzzed in because you did not want to be hanging out in that fucking parking lot. So pretty much every time we went to the Creepy Crawl, we'd go to that place. And I have some very good memories of getting to know St. Louis finally.
Yeah, that's like Harpo's in Detroit. Like, you go to Harpo's and you're like, oh, let there not be a line, because I just want to hurry up and get inside. There's a White mm-hmm. Castle next door that's got like the 3-foot thick glass, you know. Like, all right, good times.
Uh-huh.
So as far as the band, I know you guys have, is the next show with the Horse?
Yeah, and we're so fucking pumped about that show, man. Like, I saw Horrors in Austin a couple of times before I moved up here. And then I saw them months after moving up here. They played at Hey, what was the name of that place?
Haymarket Whiskey Bar?
Yes, Haymarket Whiskey Bar. They played there with Friendship Commander, and that's, both of those bands are playing the show at Portal in May. So it's kind of a trip to see that same bill, only this time we're on it. We're all big fans of Horrors. We're, if everything goes well, we're going to be recording with Ryan Bosch, who's their main engineer. And we actually sought him out because Horrors records just sound fucking incredible. Their tones are fucking impeccable. He does such a good job balancing these big, vicious tones, you know? And that's exactly the ballpark that we want our record to be in. And it's really hard to find somebody that is A, into like super big, loud, ugly tones, but can B, get like a solid fucking balance out of that and make it sound like just warm and crispy, and like you want to sit there and listen to this nonstop, you know. So yeah, we're super into horrors. We're really looking forward to working with their engineer Ryan, who mixed our EP that came out last year. Their current drummer is Doug, who plays in the band Riff Lord, and we played with them on the way to South By in 2022. So met Doug real briefly and talked to him a few times, and super fucking nice, sweet dude. I hear wonderful things about all of them as people, but as a band, we just fucking love them. So real excited about that show.
Yeah, that show's, I think that's going to be a fucking great show. It's a good opportunity to come see you guys again too, which is always a good time.
We're two shows back being like Childbite and Horrors after like, you know, almost 2 years of just kind of like, what the fuck is going on? It feels very rejuvenating, really, you know, rejuvenating, validating, and kind of inspiring. Like, fuck yeah, man. Like, feels like we're on the right track in some ways, you know. We're terrible about doing social media and all that stuff, because like we all kind of fucking hate it, you know. Like, it's, I think, bad for your mental health in the long run. It's bad for my mental health anyway. I shouldn't speak for other people. It's bad for my fucking mental health, so I try not to be on it too much. But if you're not touring all the time, like, it's like the only way to keep your name out there in some ways, you know.
It's that necessary evil.
Yeah, it really feels like that. So we really should participate in social media more than we do, but we definitely have these moments where it feels like we're not even turning our wheels as much as just like sticking our heads in the sand and ignoring everything. So to feel like we're balancing that, but we're still getting open for Childbite and Horrors, it's kind of like, oh, all right, shit does feel like it's going in the right direction. So that's good. That's good.
For sure. Well, I know, you know, I think you guys have a really good reputation for, you know, just being a great tight live band. You know, so it's after you guys played the show with Childbite, literally the next day, two or three people are like, oh my God, how was Bad Wires? Like, well, they were fucking great. What did you expect? Like, well, you know, Corey's wrist. I'm like, I know, but he got up there and he crushed it, dude. They were great. So it's nice to have those conversations. And I hope to you, it's like, oh, okay. People are like, oh man, I wanted to be there, but I couldn't, you know?
Yeah. We definitely got some really positive feedback, and we got a few people saying that, which, yeah, it always feels really good. I don't get out as much as I used to. So like, you know, between doing construction and then doing art projects and everything else, like half the time I'm just like a fucking hermit. So I don't always hear from people, and I don't spend a lot of time online looking stuff up. So it's always really nice to hear that from people. I do try to temper it though, because my stepdad, being a country musician, my stepdad played on the last live bluegrass radio show in the state of Missouri. And since he's retired, he's actually like won a couple of trophies as a fiddle player. He's a wonderful musician. And I think the best advice he ever fucking gave me when I started playing music was, you're never as bad as you think you are, but you're also never as good as you think you are. So I do always try to like kind of temper shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's still always really nice and validating and, you know, inspiring to hear people say that they're fucking into what you're doing. Cause you know, it's like anything artistic. You make something and you put it out there and you don't know how it's going to be received, or, you know, at a certain point people have their own relationship with whatever that art is. And you can be one of those people that's online and constantly trying to see what people are saying about it, or you can just put it out there and sort of walk away, which I think is probably the healthier thing to do in the long run. But then you never really, you're always like, I wonder if people like that. Fuck, I wonder, you know. So it's always super nice to hear good job, or that people are actually into it. Because, you know, we've been around since 2000. We played our first show in 2018, but in so many ways, it feels like we're still just trying to get our name out there. You know, like I would never want to headline a show in town, because like, I don't know what our fucking draw is. Like we have no reliable draw. And I think part of it is we've experienced so much like starting and stopping and a lot of other things, but it very easily feels like we're doing something in a vacuum, and is anybody paying attention at all? I can't actually tell, you know. So it's always good to hear things.
I absolutely think that they are. Like, that's, thanks, you know, if no one else is, I sure as hell am, you know.
Thanks.
Like, I can tell you the first time I saw you guys live.
Oh, right on. Was that the Spotlight show?
No, Extinction AD with Crop.
Oh, at Magbar.
Yep.
Yeah. Which was the first time we played with the Crop dudes. Yeah.
Which was, Crop's first show at Magbar.
Nice. Yeah, that was a good time for sure.
Yep. That, and then the next time obviously was with Spotlights, which, you know, like, I love those guys. You know, that whole band. They're so good. They're so kind.
Yeah, very easy people to talk to. I knew who they are because the guy who did the radio show with me and introduced me to all of those bands I was talking about earlier, No Means No, Jesus Lizard, etc., is Scott Jenkins of the drum company Jenkins Martin's Drums, which is what Spotlights play, what Chris in Spotlights.
Yeah.
And, he makes some of, I think, probably the best fucking drums out there. So when he sends me a link to like some of his artists, I usually really check them out, because if somebody's like actively getting his drum set, they're probably real fucking good at what they do. And yeah, Spotlights did not disappoint. So it was good to be able to play with them.
They are thunderous on stage. First time I saw them, this is how my brain works. Like, where did I meet you? How do I remember you? You know, first time I saw them, it was me and my wife, my best friend Sam and his wife. We went to go see Deftones and the Refused.
Oh, wow.
It was Spotlight's first like national tour.
Okay.
Chris had literally joined the band for that tour.
Nice.
And they came out, and I was enthralled from like the first note until they finished. I couldn't take my eyes off the band.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's really something special. Then, you know, fast forward a few months, and I see Melvins are playing headliners. Spotlights are opening. I'm like, well, I'm already going for the Melvins, but oh my God, you know.
Was Chris drumming with them then also?
So Chris, at that point, they were using a drum machine because Chris couldn't make that tour.
Yeah, and I remember hearing about that. I've seen a couple of bands pull off the drum machine well, but man, Chris brings a lot to that band. I can't imagine seeing them without him.
Yeah, it's, you know, realistically, I missed seeing Chris on stage, and that's the only time I've not seen the band with Chris. But they were, you know, fucking awesome.
I'm sure. They have this big pummeling sound, but it's so like smooth and buttery at the same time. It's a beautiful combination.
It is. It's just fantastic. And the way, you know, the way the three of them interact on stage, like we went, what they just did that tour with Baroness.
Okay.
And we went to see them in Columbus and then Detroit. And it was like, God, it was just so fucking good. I'm like, I see them and my mind is blown every freaking time.
Awesome. It's really special when you buy live bands that keep doing that every time you see them, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Not there. I feel like there's not a whole ton of them, you know, but
I know what you mean, man. And I want, it's like, I have these moments where I wonder if it's age, like 48 years old, you know. I've been playing in bands for over 30 years now, and I've been going to see bands for even longer than that. And, you know, it takes a lot to fucking impress me anymore. So sometimes I wonder if like, I'm just being an old curmudgeon about shit, but I don't know. I will not have an answer for that, but it's always very nice to see a band that just fucking floors me. It makes me go, what the fuck just happened? You know, it's, you know, when you've been around it for as long as you and I have, and you see a band that can do that to you, it's just like,
yeah,
that's fucking incredible.
For sure. So what was your first concert?
My first concert, the first big one that I went to was Skid Row and Bon Jovi, playing at the Hearns Arena in Columbia, Missouri. I would have been like fucking 12 or something like that. And one of my mom's friends took me and one of my best friends from school, but I think my brother actually went with somebody else. But yeah, that was like the first big concert that I went to. The first concert that I went to that made me go, whoa, what is this? Like, this is strange music I'm not familiar with, was a band from the St. Louis area actually called Dazzling Killmen. And I still fucking love them. But they, the college radio station in Columbia, Missouri was, what was it? KCOU. And they did Spring Fest or something like that. And they would do a bunch of bands in the park. And for the most part, it was like kind of pedestrian bands that, you know, some of them were really good and I'm not trying to shit on them, but not stuff that I was super into, you know, like Blues Traveler kind of stuff or Poi Dog Pondering. It was actually really good, but it's not like the kind of band I'm super into. They still put on a very good show. But they had a band called Dazzling Killmen. And I talked to them afterwards and I kept thinking that I think my ears were blown from the show, but I kept asking the name of the band and I kept thinking he was saying Nazareth Rising. So when I went to the record store, I was like, do you have Nazareth Rising? And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I was like, there's this three-piece band that just played in the park. And they're like, Dazzling Killmen? And, you know, gave me the 7-inch. But it was like, the guitar player is super simple. His name is Nick Sakes, and he's been in a shit ton of bands at this point. Real simple guitar playing, but it's like a big loud sound, but he just pretty much just plays chords and he just fucking screams. It's just like big loud angry fucking bark, which I had never seen before as a kid. The bass player is Darren Gray, who he looks like he would have been the president of the fucking nerdy jazz club in school, you know what I mean? Like, his bass is super high, but fucking wizard on the bass, just all over it. And the drummer, I'm blanking on his name right now. I want to say it was Blake Fleming, but I could be very wrong about that. But it was just big, crushing drumming. So the drummer and the bass player are just completely locked in. And it's like some of the tightest, mathiest music. It was the tightest, mathiest music I'd ever heard at that point in time. And then the guitar player is just these big chords over it and this loud, demonic bark on top of all of that. That was the first band I saw that was just completely out of context that I totally connected with. You know, it was big, loud, angry, weird, and very few people there seemed into it. And it just struck a fucking chord with me. And it was like the first time that someone sort of like opened the door of loud, weird, angry music. I was like, hey, there's a whole world in here. And then they shut it again. You know what I mean? That's how it felt seeing Dazzling Killmen. They had a couple of records that came out on their last one came out on Skin Graft Records, which I think was a Chicago label, but then moved to St. Louis. I don't remember for sure. But Face of Collapse, is that the name of it? The first record's good. The second record is fucking great. Like, put on some headphones, active listening kind of record. Like, focus on this. It's fucking incredible. First record has some wonderful stuff on it. I read an interview with them and they were talking about how they had spent forever trying to record this album. And I want to say they recorded it with Steve Albini, but it was like one of those recording sessions where they recorded it and mixed it like an entire album in basically 2 days. Oh, and wow. Like, you know, there's no files that you're sending back and forth and trying to fine tune. And they were driving home and listening to it just like, this kind of sucks, man. And I think they weren't even happy with that first record, if I'm remembering that interview right. It's got some good songs on it, but like as records go, it's the production wasn't quite there. It didn't land, you know, like,
yeah,
the impact of what that band could have did not land. But that second record is just like fucking beat the shit out of you all day long. And you're still like, more, more. Like, it's an incredible record from a band that did not get enough credit. They're fucking incredible people.
All right. Well, now I've got to go check them out. Jeez.
Yeah.
Darn. Yeah. I like talking to you because you like, I feel like every time we talk, you're like, oh, check out this band and go listen to this. And I'm like, all right. Like,
There, funny little side note, they had a 7-inch that was recorded and mixed by Jeff Tweedy
from Wilco. Yeah, yeah.
Jeff Tweedy was like a huge fan and huge proponent of this band, and when he was in Uncle Tupelo back in the day, he really helped push them. And the bass player ended up being in a band afterwards, and I'm blanking on the fucking name. I want to say it was called Ladio Balaco, but that's not right. But Wilco actually took them on tour at one point in time, or at least had them do one or two shows. My brother was at one of the shows, and he said like everybody was just booing and hating on them when they opened, and Jeff Tweedy came out and was like, that is the best band any of you are ever going to see. Like, you know, he's one of those people that also gives a lot of credit and due to unknown, obscure artists and heavy ones at that. So yeah
well, and you know, sometimes you get into those crowds and they're like, I only want to see this band, I don't care about anything else.
Yeah, especially with something weird and makes me think. I'm not here for it. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I used to know someone who Mark Dutrum from the Melvins. I actually played with him a couple of times in a couple of bands. But he was telling me that they did a couple of tours with Nine Inch Nails. And he was like, Melvins apparently had a punishment set because they're on tour with Nine Inch Nails and nobody wanted to fucking see the Melvins at all. So he was telling me about one show they did where they were playing in an old, they were playing in a hockey arena somewhere in Texas. And they'd covered the floor with a bunch of stuff. So everybody's out walking around on ice. But they're not there for the fucking Melvins. And they were just fucking booing them and just like fucking giving them the middle finger and kind of going nuts. And Mark said at one point in time, people are like tearing up the flooring and throwing it at them, but then they're like falling down on the ice. It's always funny to me that people will do that kind of shit to an opening band because they're so passionate about the big band that they're on tour with, you know. Yeah. It's just, whatever, man. People.
Yeah, that people are, we're definitely weird.
Yeah, people are.
You know, and the Melvins. Oh, go ahead.
People, they're the cause of almost all of the problems when you look at human history.
Yes. I think that's almost all of our problems, right? As humans, if we could set our egos aside and say, you know what, this is, you know, we'd be in a lot better place.
100%. Unfortunately, human history does not sort of attest to people ever figuring that out, but there's always hope, right? There's always hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when we keep beating our head against the same wall.
Yeah. And a human history is just that over and over and over, you know?
Yeah. So have you guys started recording for your next?
Not yet. We're in the middle of writing all the songs. We probably have like half of the album done and another like 5 or 6 songs that we're working on. We're hoping to go down to Tampa, Florida and record them in like November or something like that. We're going to try and get out a single before then, just so we can kind of keep getting something out there, you know, and be like, hey, we're still active and existing. Yeah. We'll see if it works out. We're really hoping that we can have a single recorded and coming out right around the time of the horse show.
Okay.
So fingers crossed on that.
So you guys going to put it out on 7-inch?
The single will probably just be a digital release. And the record, we'll see what happens. Like, it's an interesting time to be in a band, right? Like, all the tools for being an independent musician are at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. So we constantly have that discussion, like, do we want to be on a record label? Like, what would we bring to a record label? What would a record label bring to us? Like, does it make sense? Or do you just do it yourself? Like, it's all right here. Like, can we do this ourselves? I think what we keep landing on is we just don't always have the time and the headspace to do certain things. And there are people that do it better than us. So we're really hoping to find a record label to work with in the future. So we're going to start recording demos soon and then probably start shopping them around to some people I know and see if we can find a label that's willing to work with us. And then record the actual album in November is the game plan. And we'll see what happens after that.
Okay.
I always want to see everything released on vinyl, but you know, it's not always cost effective and it just looks fucking cool, but you know,
Yeah, I know.
Weird state for bands in general, and with streaming music, it's like it's amazing and it's so convenient, but it's taken away like the main avenue that everybody had to make money as an independent artist, and it's in a lot of ways devalued music. And so, yeah, we always have those conversations, like
Yeah, well,
what.
that's, you know, that's like a, that's like opening for an argument, right? Because you can, you can look at it both ways.
Totally.
All the music is right there at your fingertips, so you don't really have to pay for it. I'm the nerd, right? Who's like, man, I really like that band. I know I can listen to them on Spotify, but they've got a CD. I want to buy the CD or the album because,
Welcome, badass.
you know, I've got to have it, right? Like,
It's amazing in so many ways because like you and I could write a song tonight, we could record it and we could upload it, and people literally around the entire world could listen to it if they were aware of it. That's fucking incredible. That's incredible. You know, like I think about, you know, in the 90s when I was getting into bands and had my own radio show, like if you had told me people would be able to do that, I would have thought you were fucking out of your mind. It's incredible. So I think streaming music is so fucking powerful, and it's so empowering. You know, like I think if everybody gets the chance, everybody should record their own fucking record. You know, it's just such a fulfilling thing, and it's a neat experience, and it's really cool to be able to contribute to that kind of stuff, right? But then you also understand everything that goes into people doing that, and it's really fucking awesome. And to be in a time where literally anybody can record an album and share it with the entire fucking world is fucking cool. Like, there's just no fucking denying that. The downside, like, there's always a flip side to everything, right? The flip side is people who treat it as more than just like a quick hobby or a quick one-off. It's a lot harder to figure out how to like turn that into some sort of financial thing. A good way of looking at it would be like what Mike Watt always said about recorded music is it's just basically a poster to get people to the gig, right? Like that's how you get the real money is get people to do the gig, which, you know, gets into a whole nother host of problems. It's hard to be on the fucking road. It's expensive to be on the road. You know, I was just having a conversation with some venue owners about how hard it is to pay bands when you have a guarantee for a bigger band, but then you have these little bands, but there's not enough money for them, and then your own employees. Like it's hard to figure all that shit out, you know? So yeah, it's a long way to the top.
It's a long way to the top.
There it
Yeah, as soon as I was like, ah,
is.
it is, and it's tough, you know. I think it's tough for everyone, right? Because I feel like a lot of people go out and, you know, they go to the bar, and like last night it was $20 to go to the show. $20. There were eight bands.
That's fucking nothing.
Like,
Yeah.
you know, and the place was, it was packed, but we're talking like 100, 150 people. You know, you split even just the door between all the bands. Everyone's got their $50 or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's really being in a band, and especially if you're going to be traveling with a band, it's got to be a labor of love because there's no guarantee there will ever be money in it. So it's got to be a fucking labor of love. And hopefully the money comes in one way or another. But more than anything else, it absolutely has to be a labor of love and something that's very fulfilling for you. Because if you don't have that, then you're arguably never going to have fucking anything, you know?
Well, and you and I both know, right? Most musicians, they don't do it because they want to be rich and famous, right? They do it because they're right. They need that outlet.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I've gone through phases in my life, like after getting out of some bands in Austin, I was like, fucking, that was such a bummer. I don't know if I ever want to do this again. Like, maybe I want a normal life. Maybe I want to be a normal person. Like, that was a fucking horrible experience. But you get enough time, you're like, it's just like ingrained in my DNA. Like, if I'm going to continue to enjoy life, I have to figure out how to incorporate that somehow. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a lifer, you're a fucking lifer. And yeah.
That
kind of, it's a calling at a certain point. You know, my wife actually described it like that to me, and was like, you're 100% right. Like, it is a calling for some people. So.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. It's something that, you know, you're just kind of born with, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah. I think it's something that, you know, I think anybody could learn how to do anything. Like, I really fundamentally believe that anybody that has the physical and mental capabilities can learn how to do anything within those capabilities, especially with fucking YouTube. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like, I don't know how many times I've been on a job site, like, how the fuck do you do that? And then, like, everybody's pulling up YouTube and you will find the answers, you know? So anybody can learn how to do anything, and that includes music, but there's something about the people who just have that innate thing in their soul where it's like a very natural expression, whether they've learned something or not. Like Jimi Hendrix, fucking incredible example, right? Like, that guy arguably didn't know what note he was playing ever, but you talk about expressing yourself, holy fucking shit. Or yeah. Muddy Waters, Lightning Hopkins, like the people that are like really born with something, whatever the fuck it is, like, you can hand them a fucking coconut and a spoon, and they're going to figure out how to express themselves with it.
Yeah, which is hilarious, right? Because we look at, you know, you're talking about all these people, and Dave Grohl, he can't read music.
Right. Yeah. You know?
Like.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid and I was learning how to play, I actively did not want to learn any of that shit. I didn't want to learn scales. I didn't want to learn notes. I didn't want to learn anything because I was convinced it would like hamper my creativity in some ways. And I think there's, you know, maybe still an argument to be made for that, but there's something to be said for coming at that kind of stuff from your own angle and figuring it out on your own terms and wrapping your head around it in some ways. And then if you want to, learning that stuff, you know, there's also a lot to be said for learning the fundamentals and then moving on from there. Like, everybody, it's a journey that everybody can do their own way, you know, yeah, which is really fucking cool. I don't think I could have learned it fundamentals and then expression. I think I had to do the expression first and then start learning some other shit. But Connor, our guitar player, I'm pretty sure he was learning like basic fundamentals first. And that guy's a fucking wizard. Holy shit. He can play any style. He can play anything, but he also really expresses himself. I feel like I've known people that went to music school and they're amazing musicians, and you hand them a sheet of music and they can play anything flawlessly, mm-hmm. but you try to jam with them and they can't do shit. Yeah. Like they just can't. And you're like, well, what are you doing? Like, I don't know. We're just jamming. I'm like, fuck around, man. You know? And Connor is one of those people that could jam with anybody and can hear anything, and he can turn it into something very spectacular, very weird, and very creative and expressive. You know, there are just some people like that. And I feel very fortunate that I'm playing with somebody like that now. He's an incredible person, an incredible musician, and a fucking weird, unique, wonderful brain. I love him. So.
Right on. Well, it makes for a great live show.
Yeah, know? It really does, man. It really does.
All right. So I guess the next time I'm seeing you is at Whores.
Whores, yes. The 24th of May. It's a Friday. I keep telling people the 5th. It's not the 5th. It's the 24th.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be fucking badass.
Hell yeah. Well, that'll be really cool. I might talk to Portal and see if we can do like a ticket giveaway. We're doing that for Restless Spirit.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that. That's cool.
That'll be a cool show too.
Sure.
Corey, I don't know about you. I get up at like 4 a.m, so it's getting kind of late for me.
I don't get up that early, but it's early enough that I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to say, man, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I love seeing you. I love giving you hugs. I greatly appreciate your time, and I can't wait to see you again, my friend.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's always good talking to you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Have a great night, my friend.